Hi, everyone, and welcome to Scale Ups and Downs, the podcast brought to you by Google for Startups, in which we invite startup founders to share the ups and downs, the hint is in the name, of their journey to scale. I'm your host, Marta Krupinska, head of Google for Startups in the UK. Having co-founded three startups myself and made all sorts of mistakes and survived all sorts of trials and tribulations, I know that the key to success is surrounding oneself with the right people to find solutions together. So for each episode, I'm joined by a panel of experts, founders, investors, industry and field specialists to jointly discuss the challenges that our guest founders are dealing with. So this week, I'm super excited about this subject. We'll be talking about people. Someone once told me that companies are basically groups of people working together towards a shared goal. So it's people that really breathe life into our companies. And in this episode, we'll discuss everything from getting the culture right, hiring the right people, often at crazy speed, good problem to have, but a very challenging one, and what happens if somebody leaves. And as Steve Jobs once said, it doesn't make sense to hire smart people and tell them what to do. We hire smart people so they can tell us what to do. So, for today's episode, I'm joined by two fantastic individuals, Lyric Jain and Talia Hamilton. Lyric is an entrepreneur and engineer who founded Logically in 2017. The company now works with governments, businesses, and platforms globally, uncovering and addressing harmful misinformation and deliberate disinformation at scale. Talia is an executive recruiter at Google, currently hiring senior executives into Google Cloud's go-to-market teams across Europe, the Middle East, and Africa. Before Google, however, Talia worked in a scale-up search firm, TrueSearch, advising VC and PE-backed tech founders, as well as investment firms on their early-stage executive hiring. So thank you so much for joining me, Talia and Lyric. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
Brilliant. Enjoying the British sunshine we're getting today.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite a beautiful day, for a great conversation. So to kickstart our chat, we thought it'd be fun to hear some of your scale-up moments. Lyric, could you tell us more about Logically? And actually, it'd be awesome to hear about a specific moment when you realized, hang on, I think my business is really taking off.
Yeah, absolutely. The work that we do is very topical these days. We help identify harmful online misinformation and disinformation using a combination of our automation through AI, as well as by leveraging our subject matter experts, kind of our fact-checking teams and our open source intelligence analysts. We do that for public sector agencies around the world, as well as for platforms. I guess in my experience with the company, had a lot of false signals during the early days of, hey, this might be our scale-up moment when we hit hundreds of thousands of daily active users. And that was supposed to be a big milestone for us. But then what happened afterwards was retention really died after crisis events. So the history of the Logically app story was hundreds of thousands of users during crisis events such as elections and COVID. But immediately after that, as people's attention towards them died down a little bit, retention was in single-digit percentages and wasn't really a sustainable product to be running. But that didn't disprove the underlying technology, and we continue to use that same technology to help power platforms such as Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram and their ongoing efforts of fact-checking, as well as work that various governments are doing to crack down on misinfo and disinfo. So when we had our scale-up moment, we were quite sure not to believe just one signal, because one signal could be an anomaly, as we found in our experience. It was quite hard to resist the urge to immediately scale after winning our first long-term, multi-year recurring revenue. But once we started seeing that happening consistently, once we started getting lookalike deals where there was the same opportunity, same pain points that organizations across the world were facing, that's when it felt like we had something that was at least product market fit. And when clients started referring to each other organically, and we didn't even have to run a well-structured process to new customers, that was a bit of an inflection point for us to realize that what we have works, is scaling, our customers are enjoying it and are advocating for it. And when we decide to really push the button on scaling aggressively.
Awesome. What a ride. Lyric, incredible scaling story. Also, I'm sure required a lot of hires made very, very quickly. And also, you scaled incredibly quickly through COVID. What were your main challenges with scaling up the team?
Quite a few. When we needed people to join and in which teams was perhaps the hardest challenge to get our head around. And we still haven't managed to do that fully today. There's periods where within a month, you're hiring dozens of people. And there's then probably a quarter where you've probably hired maybe one person. So it's kind of figuring out how we devolve hiring into functional leads, hiring managers, middle-level management, and ensuring that everyone had similar principles in terms of the kind of people they were looking for culturally. And since COVID began, we brought in about 80, 85 people into the teams and retained in the high 90% as well, which is, again, the other flip side of scaling. You've got to make sure that all of the people who've been on you with this journey continue to stick with you for the foreseeable future. So yeah, it's been a fun ride.
Brilliant and incredibly relevant to the conversation we're about to have. Now, over to Talia. You're obviously part of a growing team at Google, actually responsible for growing the team. But previously, you worked plenty with startups. Often a decision to hire a new exec follows a realization that the founder or founders no longer have the necessary skills to lead a function or the business, or indeed to scale the operations further to the tune that they believe the company could scale to. Talia, how do you advise founders to hire for roles in which they themselves don't have much experience?
In terms of those early stage businesses and the types of folks that founders will bring in to help with the growth, often we'll see what works at kind of 2 to 10 or 10 to 50 is not going to be the same that will be successful from 50 to 200 and so on and so on. And that somewhat relinquishing of control, right? As time moves on, you have to allow the business to somewhat spread its wings and to put the people entrusted in that growth to really start to take charge of that. And if we try to retain too much of that, then of course we restrict the freedom and the agility of the growth. And the quote that was said about Steve Jobs as well, we bring these people on board in order to help us to grow and be better, right? And to have that humility when we're making those hires. Now, what we saw time and again, certainly when I was working with True, was that the founders had brought folks on board who were maybe known to them, really fantastic, talented, brilliant people, but not necessarily with the business acumen to scale and grow, and didn't necessarily have the long-standing tenure an experience of both success and, of course, the failures as well, in order to be able to take that business to the next level.
That's awesome. And it actually leads us onto my second question to you, Talia, which is, as we discuss both scale-ups and scale-downs, sometimes these critical senior hires go wrong, and you talk about the importance of communication. But any other main mistakes to avoid?
Something that we saw time and again when I was at True was founders or CEOs saying that they wanted to bring in the big, impressive players. And we would have these target lists of organizations, and they would say, you know, if it was an e-commerce brand, they would want the likely suspects from that industry. If those individuals that we're looking at from those organizations have seen the growth, if they've been there a significant amount of time and lived through that growth story, excellent, great. And many of those individuals want to go and replicate that same success, right? When a business gets too big or too stable, they start to get itchy feet and they want to go and have the same excitement over again. That's the perfect type of candidate for an earlier stage organization. What I think is important to not necessarily avoid, but be aware of, is that just going for a brand without that story behind it. At what point has someone seen that growth? Was it 0 to 50, 50 to 200, 200 to 500? Where have they seen that? What were their learnings from that, rather than kind of getting starry-eyed about certain organizations and where people might have come from?
Talia, I love what you just said, not only because it's so true, but also because you've perfectly set me up to plug Google for Startups, because that's why you should not have to try and hire people from Google. We're just going to give you access to people from Google for as long as you need. Just figure out from us what we're doing and how we're doing it well, and then be able to go and develop other talent and people who can move really, really quickly and really grow your businesses. So this has gone really, really well, guys. And we've got our first founder here to join us for the conversation. I could not be more pleased that Wilfred, co-founder of AudioMob, made time to join us this afternoon, not least because he's a very, very busy man, having recently raised a buttload of cash that he's about to, as I understand, start spending on bringing the best team together. So Wilfred, tell us about AudioMob and tell us about yourself.
Okay, so AudioMob is around bringing audio advertising into mobile games. And a lot of people might ask, why would you do that? So if you ever played a mobile game and you've been interrupted by a video ad, what we're doing is we're replacing that video ad with an audio ad, which actually allows you to continue to play. So very similarly to how we used to, before the days of Netflix, before Squid Games, we used to be interrupted by a ad break watching a movie where people would go, okay, it's time for me to go and have a bathroom break. It's time for me to go make food. A similar thing happens on mobile games. People put the mobile game down, right? But a lot of these mobile games are free experiences. So the way they need to basically keep the content accessible and free is by advertising. We're just less annoying in terms of interrupting you during your play, but we also allow game developers to continue to have an ecosystem and grow.
Awesome. And how did you come to found AudioMob?
I was working at Google as an engineer and also as a account strategist. So I was there for almost 4 years, but then I moved over to programmatic account strategist. So I was in Google Dublin office. That's where I met Christian, my co-founder. And then left Google and decided that I wanted to try a new challenge. And that was when we started AudioMob, because we could just see how large audio advertising was getting due to Spotify, due to podcasting increasing, and then seeing how large mobile gaming in particular was getting and how diverse it was getting from being like 56% female in comparison to like console gaming. So it was really interesting, actually, audience as well.
Super cool. Awesome. Wilfred, thank you for that. So on to our challenge. What can we help you with? What's going on at AudioMob? And how can myself, Lyric, and Talia help you figure out your challenge?
Yeah, first and foremost, thanks for the great conversation, actually. I was listening very intensely because something Talia said hit home around some of the mistakes that we made at the beginning. As you said, targeting really big like directors and people who worked in those firms. And we soon learned that wasn't the case. So yeah, that was really interesting. But to Marta's question, the challenge we have now is that, as Marta previously mentioned, we've raised like $14 million at $110 million valuation. And now comes the big challenge of now recruiting people and getting the right people in. Also doing this in a manner that isn't too slow. I won't say fast, because I don't actually think hiring fast is a good idea, but not too slow is always the word I use. And across multiple offices. So we have an office in London, and we also have an office in Abu Dhabi as well. And then we're also planning to open an office in the States as well. So brings a really interesting problem where you're hiring across multiple geos, want to make sure we hire the right people, but also want to do it in a timely manner.
Super exciting. And I'm really missing some sort of audio version of exploding fireworks and claps to really congratulate you on your recent raise. Can you give us a little bit more color? What are the roles?
Sure. So there are numerous roles, from a number of head of roles. So for example, head of operations, head of people, head of engineering, and head of marketing. And then we have roles that are building that gaming partnerships team. So we decided to go with the terminology through feedback of gaming partnerships was the most accurate of the role. And that's basically getting more game development studios to integrate our technology into them. So that's the gaming partnership role. Then we also have roles on the sales side, right? So the people who then sell in these campaigns to people like Warner Music and Intel and some of our other agencies that we work with. So like 5 different sales roles we're hiring for on that side and 5 publisher roles. And then after that, we have stuff like typical engineering roles, like QA testers and C++ engineers and the likes of that. So yeah, it's almost like the extension of the current small team, but like 3 to 4 times, basically.
Makes sense. And why London and Abu Dhabi?
London, because it made sense because of where we have initially created the company. It's still a very good place geographically for European developers. Also, ad tech, actually, London is one of the most advanced markets due to the agency ecosystem. So that also made a lot of sense. And it's actually, we've got one of the biggest gaming ecosystems here, actually, in the UK as a whole. Grand Theft Auto is made by Rockstar Games, which is a UK studio and company. So a lot of talent and stuff here. Then Abu Dhabi is really interesting as well, because they have a big podcast content consumption and also music streaming. So on the audio side, there's a lot of audio content going around. And also, it's got a very high propensity for mobile phone usage. A lot of people have either 1 or 2 phones. So there's a lot of people consuming these games as well. Like there's a massive game out in the Middle East called PUBG. It's a bit like Call of Duty, but it's really taken over by storm. The last thing I'll say is they also have a young population as well. So there's a lot of gaming and esports going on. There's also a UAE government, specifically the Abu Dhabi government, have been doing a lot around getting gaming, media and entertainment into the region as well, because they see it as a massive opportunity. So yeah, that would be the last reason.
And one last question for me. Are you hiring ahead of the Abu Dhabi office? Is one of you going to move there? How are you thinking of managing the teams?
So yeah, we are getting a country manager. Yes. So we are going to have an office manager, especially because it also helps if they speak Arabic as well. And they can also help with just the general day-to-day of the management of the office as well. So yeah, we are. So there'll be a country manager as well. Also spend some time there, obviously, getting that off the ground.
Awesome. So we've got a bunch of things to unpack. A country manager, multiple geos, leadership roles, staff roles, at speed, world class. How do we do this? Talia, I'm sure you're burning with answers.
Yeah, and yet more questions as well, Marta, to be fair. My question, Wilfred, I had off the back of the country manager piece was, Do you have established entity, legal entity to hire now in Abu Dhabi? And I'm guessing that you may well do, but it's a good question just to double check on.
Yes, we do. Yeah, we do. So we have our Abu Dhabi branch. So we're registered, actually 2454. The government entity did a really great job of like helping us with that. They also, maybe preempting something you might ask, they also help with visa and applications and everything through the government entity. So fast tracking that, making sure everything's done in accordance to the UAE laws as well.
That's fantastic, because it is a huge challenge that we come up against often when somebody wants to hire in a certain region. And then our first question being that, and then the answer is, oh no, we have to hire somebody that's got that regional experience, but is based in a place where actually the legal entity exists. And it makes it that bit more complicated to be doing it somewhat remotely. So that's a good start. I think in terms of, you were saying about not hiring fast, but maybe mindfully at pace is a good phrase to kind of have in mind. And, you know, thinking about the actions that we're taking, but also being mindful that we do need to take action and be decisive at times as well. I think whenever a business is making multiple hires, there is sometimes a risk of there being too much overthinking in terms of who do we hire, where do we hire, and being too restrictive in terms of certain profiles. So you mentioned about marketing, for instance. I've worked with businesses before that really want to hire an overall fantastic marketeer into a sort of CMO position. Now, if you were to find somebody that's absolutely fantastic at growth marketing, which I'm sure for the type of business that you have that you would want, the science side of marketing rather than the art. However, if you were to find somebody that's fantastic and they're leaning more over to the brand side, then maybe that's something to think about in terms of investment or who you bring through. So having rigor around person specifications, but also having some flexibility to see opportunities. If somebody happens to be available and interested and engaged and they are super, super high potential and you know they can make a difference to their business, it can be a mistake to not bring them through at that moment because the timing isn't 100% perfect for them. So I think that's something to bear in mind. And also, it sounds like you're doing things in the right order, which is great, and being quite pragmatic, but bringing the leadership of the organization through first. And I think Lyric mentioned before about, you know, starting to relinquish some of that hiring responsibility that you then, those leaders that you bring in, the country manager for Abu Dhabi, for example, is then going to have a firsthand influence of who they then hire and really taking charge and ownership of that region. The only way that you can scale and keep the strategy front of mind for you as what you want to do next is to not be too held back by everything else that's happening day to day. Trust that that country manager will be hiring people that they get on with, they gel with, they have the chemistry with, then longer term retention is more stable.
Lyric, from your experience, what are the main things that you're thinking about for Wilfred to take into account?
I guess a clarification question. It sounds like you're building the core operations here in London and spinning out kind of almost go-to-market teams in different geographies, or is there something distinct that's happening in each geography on top of the go-to-market teams?
That's a really good question. So in most of the geographies, so London, Abu Dhabi and the States, there will be a sales presence in all of them because of the fact that it just makes sense in terms of the brands. If you're in the States, you've got Disney. If you're in the UK, we've got Diageo, for example. So it just makes sense to actually have a sales team and the sales presence. And we all know when you're selling, a lot easier to do in person, right? Build rapport and stuff. So it makes a lot more sense to have them there. But then we are looking at, because of the way engineers work, I say this as an engineer, so I can't cause too much offense. We like some sunshine. And so that's why we're also placing a lot of our engineers in Abu Dhabi in terms of the space. And also they'll be located near like a waterfront. Government has given us an office space near the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix track, so near Ferrari World. So a nice kind of spot as well to actually place a lot of our engineering team.
I think I want to put my application in.
Yeah, I'm an engineer by training.
Although Talia did say, don't hire people from Google.
You know the growth stories though, Marta, so you're fine, you're okay. It was with that caveat, remember?
awesome, then I'll take that desk.
Marta, you're always welcome. Marta's helped us move along the way. So that would be the Abu Dhabi office. And yeah, in terms of marketing, and I think Talia was alluding to this around making sure you're flexible, and I totally agree with you. There are some roles we understand, like if we're going to get the top talent, they might not want to move. there might be a particular office, when I say that, that they want to stay in, or they might like the idea of being remote. So there are roles where we say a location, we're like, oh, prefer London, preferably Abu Dhabi, but they will definitely be flexible because we want to get that world-class talent in.
That's incredibly helpful. And it sounds like there's a lot of similarities, perhaps for slightly different reasons, but I think the way we built out our teams in different geographies was kind of similar. So a lot of our engineering team is based out of India, but we also had a commercial presence, kind of a sales and go-to-market teams over there. However, in other countries, so outside of the UK, with our core teams present, it's mainly our go-to-market teams that we're building out in other geographies. So I guess one thing to perhaps bear in mind is figuring out, outside of these exceptional markets where for whatever reason, there's going to be a disproportionate advantage of getting, say, engineers or roles for a particular function. What does your model of a new geography look like? What does a new country look like? Does it look like a country manager, VP of strategic partnerships? It's worth thinking about that in kind of the short to medium term, but also perhaps looking way, way out in the future. And this hints at a cultural point as well. Kind of how do you want these geographies to be managed way, way out in the future? Do you want it to be every country is its own P&L that's reporting into Global UK, or do you want it to be one big ship? It doesn't matter which country you're in. So those kind of cultural factors are also important because it'll kind of direct what seniority of people you might want to consider bringing in. It'd be great to understand what your recruitment process looks like at the moment. Have you run any numbers on kind of how many hours do you have to put into one person at the moment, what stages are involved? Because some of those things do require a bit of innovation, a bit of tweaking as you go from kind of 10 to 20 to 40 to 100.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question, Lyric. So what we've done is we've actually got like an internal recruiter now, actually, because there's just so many roles at the same time and there's so much organization. So they've actually helped streamline and they do like the screening calls. Then we can go into the next section. And then only then will me and Christian be contacted to join the final stage interviews. What would be good is around comparing how long it took with me and Christian and how many hours that took versus how much it took with the recruiters as well, because that would be actually interesting data when I think about it.
Yeah, particularly as it's different functions, right? So if you're building out kind of the head of engineering, you'll want to get some of your engineers buy-in, presumably, before you make that hire. So it's worth kind of managing their time preciously so that they don't get exhausted just after a couple of conversations, and kind of front-loading that with screening through recruiters, as well as limiting and efficiently using that time, helps ensure that hiring fatigue doesn't take over the entire organization.
Awesome point. And actually, Wilfred, a few thoughts from me. And I will just say, as far as I'm concerned, you're entering the most exciting part of growing your business. I think when I look back, the happiest I've ever been at work was around sort of 2014, 2015, after we raised Series A at Asimo. And it was finally, we scaled the team to about 40. And finally, there were specialists in each area that, again, I felt I could learn from and all the whole team could learn from and build a rocket ship together. And a couple of things I think we got right and wrong sometimes. So one, there is this question around how much time founders should be spending hiring. And there are two elements to it. One is culture. I don't think anyone can really replace the founders in that role of driving culture. And it's both for the benefit of your team and the organization, but also, especially for those more senior hires. I think we think a lot about hiring in terms of people selling their skills to us, but actually as founders, we are selling to the talent. So I completely agree that, you know, using recruiters, getting other people to help. But if you're really trying to cherry pick extra talent, I would say spend 3 hours on LinkedIn, message people directly, try and identify them on LinkedIn and message them and say, hi, I'm Wilfred. I just raised a bunch of money and I want you in my organization. They won't reply to the recruiter. They will reply to you. And I think that's the time that investment of time will pay off in my experience for sure. The other thing I'd say is I've used advisors before for senior hires. So for instance, if there are investors that you've got on the board or advisors who are specialists in a given area where you or Christian might not be, it's also great to get them involved, get their input. In fact, tap them for recommendations. They will have invested in a large number of organizations. They should have good networks. And the last thing I'd say is, and I'm sure it's important to everybody on this call, think what your approach to diversity is. And that is not just diversity in terms of men, women, it's also racial diversity or where people come from, just introducing that diversity of thought into the organization. We all know, and data shows, that it just takes much longer to build diverse pipelines, especially for technical roles. So it's great as you're considering your timelines and thinking about that at pace, but reasonable means to you that you don't lose sight that this diversity piece is important, because if you end up with an organization, I'm sure you wouldn't, but if some end up with an organization of 30, 40 people that all look and act the same, then getting that diverse talent further down the line is so much harder.
I just wanted to add quickly onto that. The diversity of thought piece, when we were talking about getting sidetracked with certain organizations or people coming from certain backgrounds, I think education background is very similar to that as well. And I think we can get very siloed into thinking that certain schools or certain backgrounds from an academic standpoint is going to be prioritized. If you're working in a consumer business, then you really want to have a fair representation of the 100% as much as possible. And if you're only looking at that very narrow side of schooling, then I think it can become quite restrictive in terms of bringing that through.
Awesome. This has been such a great, robust conversation. I hope it's been interesting to me. So I'm sure that it will be also to people who tune in. And mostly, I hope, Wilfred, that it's helpful to you.
Yes, I just want to thank all three of you. So Marta, Lyric, and Talia, because I think there's some really good insights, which I'm actually going to go over to Christian, because he's actually in the same office as me now, and speak about. And one thing I just wanted to talk about, Marta, 100% agree with you, actually. We had a conversation with one of the co-founders of Stripe. He said the exact same thing, that you should think outside the box as a founder and do those kind of things where you message people, because that will get people to actually respond versus recruit. And that is something that has been weighing on my mind, but you've just confirmed it. And yeah, Lyric, what you were saying around the thinking about early doors around the culture, and if you want them to be their own different ships or under one kind of ship, is really good consideration and really interesting consideration. And then Talia, I totally also agree with what you just mentioned around, one, just being mindful of the optimal process. And sometimes you might have to go outside that. And I actually think it's a really good point around, even if it's not the right timing, it might be worth getting the person in, sorting out the logistics around how you might have to organize that later. So no, I appreciate all of the advice and gems that you've all shared today.
Fabulous. Thanks, Wilfred. Congratulations to you and Christian. And before you go, how can we find you online, both yourself and Audiomob, to learn more about you?
So it's Wilfred with an I, O-B-E-N-G afterwards. So if you want my Twitter handle, it's just Wilfred Obeng. If you want my Instagram handle, it's the same. If you want LinkedIn, it's the same. And feel free to reach out to me on any of the social platforms.
Fabulous. So all engineers out there who want a sunny seat in Abu Dhabi, reach out to Wilfred for roles at Audiomob. Brilliant. Wilfred, thanks so much. Have a fabulous afternoon. And I am so excited that we've got our second founder here to join us for today's conversation about people. We're joined by Fran Hodgson from Goodbox. I've known Fran for years, been so impressed by her and what she's building. Fran, can you tell our panel and our listeners about yourself and about Goodbox?
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thanks for having me. It's excellent. So Goodbox founded back in 2016 with the view to help nonprofit organizations in our ever-increasing cashless society. So very simply put, we deliver contactless technology for nonprofits to allow them to accept donations via Apple, Android Pay, and contactless. So just imagine your traditional charity cash coin box replaced with a digital version. We work with loads of museums and galleries, about 2,000 organizations up and down the countries. And one of our most exciting recent clients is Pret A Manger. We're working with the Pret Foundation now in 80 stores across the country, collecting funds digitally for the Pret Foundation, which is super cool. And of course, on our journey, I've been really fortunate to be part of the Female Founders Program with Google and the Growth Program. So it's a pleasure to be here today.
Awesome. And how did you come to found Goodbox?
I was working firsthand in charity, and then I ran a global charity day for an organization in the City of London. And I'd worked with about 200 UK charities and just seen firsthand how inefficient fundraising was for them and how hard it is to actually raise funds effectively. And if there was just easy and simple ways in which people can donate to support those causes, it just amplifies the effectiveness of all those hours and hours of hard work that goes into fundraising, and hopefully means that, you know, these causes can be better off.
Amazing. Really, really pleased that you guys exist, and definitely something we can see in the streets. Moving to cashless has benefited many of us, but many of us are very much left behind. So today at Scale Ups and Downs, we're talking all about people. And we're here with Lyric, who founded Logically, hired hired a team of 80. Most of the growth happened remotely during lockdown. We've got Talia, who placed execs in multiple startups and is hiring for our executive teams at Google Cloud. Fran, what's on your mind today in relation to people?
Maintaining culture throughout the pandemic has been a challenge for us, certainly. We had to shut a couple of our offices. And even now, I'm hovering in a co-working space. I'm just hoping the audio is going to come out okay. And it's just, you know, it's not the same as being in person in a room chatting to people. And communication can and does frequently break down. So I would be really keen to ask the panel if they had any data around effectiveness of remote teams or advice on how to maintain culture effectively when you are often so separated as a team.
Awesome. Thanks for that question, Fran. And I'm sure, Lyric, you've got heaps of experience in building culture remotely, not least with teams that were already in place, but actually introducing new people into culture that you're trying to build.
Yes, I think it's been challenging for a lot of the same reasons that you mentioned, Fran. Almost everyone, logically pre-pandemic, work from some office somewhere in the world. And even now we've just started opening our offices back up. Like today, I'm literally sat in our office in London, but I'm one of four people here and the office is meant for 40 odd people. And we're trying to set it back up. So I think one thing to recognize is a lot of the kind of social happens being together on Thursday evenings to just chatting next to water coolers, having food together and eating together is hard to replicate online or completely remotely, which just means you've got to invest in internal communication. And it's something that historically we haven't been that good at. So we made it a priority very early on in the pandemic to kind of up the frequency of internal comms, make sure that both kind of formal communication was made available to public channels in our internal platforms, and also that we tried to do as many social things as we could, albeit remotely. Some failed experiments, some slightly better ones, from kind of Dungeons and Dragons servers that some people hosted to other kind of games that people got involved in, fantasy leagues and all of that. So we tried to replicate the same kind of social atmosphere that we had in the office, but remotely. One particular trait that we've noticed has been around kind of microcultures, especially with various people being hired remotely, never being surrounded or meeting people physically at Logically. Entire cohorts of people have ended up joining the organization who have a very similar way within the cohort of how they work with each other and their little microcosm of Logically culture looks like. However, the same phenomenon is kind of happening in multiple clusters. So that's been a challenge for us to try and overcome, and perhaps you've noticed similar traits. But I think what's really powerful for mission-focused organizations such as yours, and even in our case, is that tends to bring people together and gives them enough in common to motivate them. It's the mission behind the company that motivates everyone who joins us. Most people, that is the number one reason. So that tends to be at the core of what defines culture Logically. And everything else is stuff that we have to build on top of it.
Talia, what are your thoughts?
Thanks, Marta. Francesca, it's good to meet you. I have got a very personal story for this because I onboarded remotely into Google in April 2020. And when I interviewed, everything was completely regular. I handed in my notice, everything was still very much a normal world. And then by the time I started, we were very much in lockdown. And I think going through that process and trying to onboard remotely, navigate through any business, make good impressions, make good first impressions when you are at home. And it's something actually that I've been learning about in my master's recently around what we call impression management, and the perception of what we put out into the world might be very different in different forums. And we have our kind of professional persona. And when we're forced to onboard remotely or work in any kind of hybrid way, we have certain elements of domesticity in whichever form that takes, which intrudes on our professional life. And I think having the openness and almost the vulnerability as leaders to completely accept that in ourselves as well as others, I think is a huge factor to making people feel included and that they belong at work. So some of the most helpful things that I found were leaders that were not trying to hold it all together and act like everything was going perfectly. Something disastrous happening at home, or the inevitability of that chaos, whether it's the dog barking, the postman ringing the doorbell, small children, bad Wi-Fi, you know, whatever it might be, there are challenges that come with it. But of course, we've all found that there are the benefits as well. And I think that's where we're you know, often seeing that people are reluctant to come back to a 5 day a week model. I loved what Lyric said about microcultures, because there's definitely a feeling, certainly in the team that I work within, and I think in wider teams that I've seen, where there are the people that have onboarded during the pandemic, and there is almost a camaraderie of that cohort that sets them aside from the rest of the organization. So that's a kind of microculture. And then some of those folks are going to want to really come back to the office and be very present and be in the office. And others, they may be longstanding members of the business, but actually they want to continue to adopt the home working and be more remote. And in those instances, I think what I've seen work very well in previous businesses that already had adopted hybrid working were having set days that people were in the office, having days where we knew that on Tuesdays and Thursdays, everybody with the best of everyone's ability, because it's never 100% going to work for everyone each week, but having set days when everyone's there, having face-to-face engagement, and so therefore team calls and things like that are for the most part in person, and then setting the team interactions on those particular days when people are in, and then having the days when people are at home as more of a quiet work or deep work time. And so, yeah, that's something that I've seen work well. But again, something else that I've learned in my master's recently is one of the worst things that you can do is put inflexibility around a flexible working plan for morale, for engagement, for the way that people perceive, you know, feeling accommodated or feeling included at work. And so really listening to individuals, I think, and considering, you know, what is the consensus and what do people mostly feel would work for them is really, really important. And just one last thing that I think is really helpful. Lyric mentioned that the kind of big virtual events that happen when we're working in hybrid teams, that was all fantastic. My experience of that has been great. What I think can be done in a more mindful way are the small interactions, even just a ping. How are you getting on today? A 15-minute check-in on a really, really regular basis, I think goes a really long way, because when we're all siloed at home, it can feel like there are big expanses of time when we are very much an island, and it just brings us back into center and the culture more buoyant and the morale high where we can.
Thank you. That's super interesting. Just to build on what you were saying there a little bit, like I think for individuals, there are loads and loads of amazing benefits that spun out of this rapid adoption of increased flexibility amongst the workplace. But for leaders and for people trying to run businesses, it is increasingly hard. Just last night, for example, I found myself, you know, messaging a colleague. It was like 12:45. And I was thinking, this is insane. Like, is he just really busy, or has he just, I hope he just took a break and walked the dog or picked the kids up and is working now to catch up? It's really difficult to tell whether it's more efficient or, and every scenario is going to be different. So I think that measure of productivity and how do we measure performance and engagement is a real, real challenge for leaders particularly.
I think, Fran, there's probably something that Tali already touched upon, which is really listening to the team. And that's just made so much harder when we're all remote. And this is obviously not a solution for everybody, but I really want to believe that there are platforms out there that are helping to do this in a little bit more structured manner. So in terms of getting feedback from the team, I've used the platform in the past called Small Improvements. It works for 360 and performance reviews, but it also, you can set up these questions being sent to the team every week or every couple of weeks that are either specifically about something that's going on in the organization, something about the office, something about the team, something about the perks, something about the training program. But also it insists that every so often, once a month or every two, it sends a question of how happy are you at work on a scale from 1 to 10. It basically gives you an NPS score of your team and of your company internally, and it allows you to plot it over time. And also it allows the team to give anonymous or not feedback on all of these issues. And what I found worked really well was then we would really show this at town halls or team meetings to the entire team. So there was a level of transparency and also sort of spoke to how we behaved as founders. And just following on from that, and I'm sort of surprised almost, we were talking about remote for all this time and nobody mentioned the metaverse. And listen, in. Like, we could probably have a whole entire podcast about metaverse, but increasingly I work with founders who say that sort of virtual offices, virtual HQs, I think, is it Gather? That's the one that is most famous. They do work for some teams because that idea of you can be doing work in a corner and then come closer to a group of colleagues and overhear conversations a little bit like you would in a real life office can help these serendipitous sort of learning opportunities. And probably the one last that I'd mention and something that I've again found to be tricky, especially for more junior team members who want to continue learning, and that is so much harder when you're alone in a room and unless you structure the time to learn. There is a cool little startup called Oddvice. I believe they're Austrian, but it's a nifty little product that helps do audio recordings of little snippets of insight or advice or what went well that can be shared between different members of the teams or different teams that sort of in a cool, casual way helps learn from one another rather than, again, building teams or writing decks. And especially in fast-moving small startups, this can be quite tricky. So again, just a few sort of ideas on from communication to learning to you as a founder knowing what your team needs from you and giving them a structured way of feeding back. Because sometimes it's just hard to come up, you know, walk up to the boss and say, hey, this isn't working. But Fran, thank you so much for joining. Good luck with Goodbox and congrats on everything you've achieved. And I'm sure we all together as a community of founders in the startup ecosystem, we will be finding solutions to all these challenges, especially as we make time to talk to each other and share openly as you have and try and come up with solutions together. Fran, how do we find you online? How do we follow you and Goodbox?
Yeah, great. Just go to the website, www.goodbox.com, and you can pick up all the social links and anything you need from there. So that's goodbox.com. Thanks so much.
Awesome. And I'll definitely be donating to the Pret Foundation. Lyric, Talia, you've been incredible. We went through so much meaty stuff today. We've heard from Wilfred on the challenges of raising $17 million, but also challenges of then spending it to hire a great team across multiple locations. We talked about founder engagement in hiring, bringing in internal recruiters, setting up panels from across the teams. We talked about the importance of selling to the talent to make sure that they feel they're joining the best organization in the world and how to do this in this increasingly remote world. And from that, we went on to Fran's question around building a culture long-term, making teams feel engaged and happy, and what are the ways to keep the tabs on how our staff are feeling, how they're doing, how they can learn from one another, how they can feed back to the founders and co-create the culture of the organization in which they want to work. Such meaty questions. I hope that this is at least sparking some thoughts or impressions for everybody that has tuned in. I cannot stress this enough. The thing that we've just done with Fran and with Wilfred, we could be doing with you. So hey, founders out there, if you have challenges or questions that you're pondering, and if you'd like to come together with some of the most amazing founders and experts in the Google for Startups community, please hit us up at scaleupsanddowns.com and submit your challenge.